The Conservatives are the largest party. They don't have an overall majority at this stage. The Prime Minister called this election because she wanted certainty and stability. This doesn't seem to look like certainty and stability.
Welcome to Polling Politics. This week's podcast is sponsored by Ladbrokes Political Betting. Hello and welcome to Polling Politics, the election. I'm Joe Twyman from Delta Poll.
I'm Marie LeConte. Sorry, I wasn't listening.
Every week during the campaign, Marie and I round up the key political stories and statistics of the week, and we're also joined by a top guest from the world of politics to delve into polling and public opinion in more detail. Our guest today is Abby Tomlinson. Hello.
Hello, thank you for having me.
Abby is Communications and Media Officer at For Our Future's Sake and was previously the creator of Millie Fandom, the online fan club, are we calling it that?
Yeah, I think online fan club.
For former Labour leader Ed Miliband. Abby, how's your election going?
It's mixed at the moment. I think what's quite interesting about this, I never thought that we should have an election. I thought it was going to be a bad idea to sort Brexit out via an election, and I think another hung parliament could happen and then we're just in the same situation. So I didn't want one in the first place, so it took me a while to come around to the idea of it. But I think now, you know, we can focus on policy and it's gonna be good.
When did you want an election?
I didn't want one at all.
Never again.
Someone finally joining my campaign. Less democracy.
What do we want? Fewer votes. When do we want them? Infrequently.
No, I thought I'm obviously part of the People's Vote campaign. So I was in favour of a confirmed referendum, this idea that we sort Brexit out just asking the one question rather than doing an election when we have to answer the Brexit question and also a million other questions at the same time.
The polling on this has remained relatively unchanged, actually. The majority of people do support the new election, but at the same time, it's mainly tied to partisan support, and so it was the Conservatives the most keen to begin with. But now everyone seems to have fallen on board.
Not me. I have not.
Apart from Marie, who's standing firm on her no election.
I've
platform.
Been reminding people to not vote, not get registered. Just to provide some balance. Everyone keeps saying, you know, please register to vote. And I'm like, no. In the spirit of impartiality, I'm going to tell people not to vote and not register.
That would be interesting, actually, if impartiality meant that broadcasters had to have someone on who said, no, don't vote, complete waste of time, went all into rational choice theory and how the probability of actually determining benefit from your vote is very, very small.
I'm available for that. If the BBC is listening, I can be that person.
The BBC's not listening. Brexit cast. The voting intention polling is largely unchanged also from where we were last week. In normal times, you'd expect a majority, but of course, it could be that the situation changes between now and election day. And then, of course, it comes down to seat-by-seat stuff. Abby, at the height of Millifandom, of course, David Cameron tweeted out, Britain faces a simple and inescapable choice, stability and strong government with me or chaos with Ed Miliband. Thank goodness we didn't get that chaos.
I mean, it's like a theme over the last 3.5 years, hasn't it? That tweet coming back to haunt David Cameron. I haven't read his book, but I've heard that it's not in there, that tweet. So I think he'd rather forget that.
And how does your position at For Our Future's Sake change during an election campaign?
So For Our Future's Sake, we're kind of focusing on we haven't been at work over the last 2 weeks, thank you Roland Rudd, but we're meant to be focusing on sort of getting young people registered to vote, and this idea for, you know, for a lot of young people this is like the first vote on Brexit in a sense, because obviously a lot of young people didn't get to vote in the referendum in 2016, a lot's changed since 2017, so this idea of maybe treating it as a confirmed referendum on Brexit is something a few people are actually doing. You know, we've seen the tactical voting websites that have been launched, you know, not ideal a lot of them, but still, I think it's really interesting the way that it's been sort of a Brexit election at the moment.
Why do you say not ideal for the tactical voting sites? Tactical voting, of course, has been a big point of discussion over the last week. Fewer than 10% of people at the moment say they're going to vote tactically, although, of course, isn't every vote tactical? But that's another...
But isn't it, you could argue, actually, that 10% in the right places could change everything.
Absolutely. It's likely to have a small impact in a small number of constituencies, but that, in turn, could have a large impact.
Can I just say, on that note, because I've been writing a piece actually on tactical voting, and I've kind of been looking at the history of it and it, you know, happening in previous elections. And there's a brilliant, brilliant quote from, so I think it was the 2001 election, where so the Guardian breathlessly reported on a few websites on the internet telling you how to vote. And there's a completely panicked quote from the Electoral Commission saying, well, they're just about on the right side of the law, but just about these online websites telling you how to vote.
My very first appearance on TV, because I know you're always interested in this, other than the dating show I was on when I was a sixth former, to be discussed another time, was talking to Rita Chakrabarty about tactical voting websites that had launched in 2001 and how that was attracting all sorts of attention.
God, you're so old.
Well, I think the term you're looking for is you're so experienced in the world of political research. My first election was 1992, working on that.
What?
But how? Anyway, back to our guest today. Much though this chat is interesting. Abby, how do you think the tactical voting sites are influencing this election, if at all?
I mean, the Best of Britain one hat was telling people to vote Labour in Northern Ireland where they don't field candidates. So, I mean, I don't think it's been very well thought through, a few of them. And there's going to be some constituencies where people just aren't going to want to vote for that. Like in Canterbury, for example, Lib Dems are trying to find another candidate. And obviously we don't know what the tactical vote sites are going to tell them to do. So I think it's very sort of complicated and people aren't going to follow them because they're always going to have issues.
Ooh, I actually think I have a controversial opinion on this, which is quite rare, so I'm quite happy about it. But I actually don't see why the Lib Dems shouldn't have a candidate in Canterbury. Like, Labour is not standing down in any seats, I think, you know, where the Lib Dems can win. And it's the fact as well, and I totally get in, and I really like Rosie Duffield, and I think she's a brilliant MP, but it doesn't really matter what she thinks. Like, she's not an independent MP standing on the opinions of Rosie Duffield. She is standing under the Labour platform. And so I can actually see the argument in saying, well, actually, you know, she can think whatever she wants, but she's still standing for a party that supports a second referendum and, you know, options that not all of the Remainers want. So I don't actually see why the Lib Dems shouldn't have a candidate. That seems to be, yeah, quite controversial, I think, as an opinion.
Yeah, this is a story about the Lib Dem candidate standing down in Canterbury and letting Labour have an unopposed run in that respect. All these sorts of contests and the nuances within individual constituencies are just another reason why it's more difficult to extrapolate what the national vote picture might mean in terms of individual seats. Because when you've got independent candidates who were previously the MP running in those areas, when you've got people splitting the Remain vote, splitting the Leave vote, etc., it gets very complicated. What I'm surprised about is no one set up, as far as I know, a fake tactical voting site, which looks very, very professional. You type in lots of details, and then at the end it just says, vote Conservative. You know, something like that. Vote Brexit Party. I'm surprised that's the kind of thing, particularly that the Brexit Party has previously been so on top of, at least when it was called Leave.eu. But, you know, maybe it'll launch after this podcast. We'll add that to another thing that people owe us royalties for.
Oh my God, I'd love to make one like this. And yeah, similarly, you kind of like type in and give, you know, it asks you for lots of data and lots of analysis, whatever. And wherever you are, whatever you want, it just says Jeb. Just Jeb Bush. Bring back that meme. Just Jeb.
I think it's too late for that.
No, Jeb.
Pollsters, of course, will be approaching this in different ways. Some will have a full ballot paper that you can click on the candidate. Others will be having just the candidates running that constituency, and others will be doing the analysis afterwards. Makes it very, very complicated, though. Abby, is this a Brexit election, or is it the Brexit election?
I think it's more the Brexit election than a Brexit election. It was called to solve Brexit, but I think the policy issues are going to sort of come to the forefront a bit more as the debate goes on in the next few weeks. Like, I remember reading something out, the NHS winter crisis, for example, could really impact the Conservative Party in the election, and that could potentially be very interesting. And I think, you know, on the doorstep when you talk to people, Brexit is brought up, but they do tend to bring the NHS, schools, things like that. So it's not one thing that people care about. I think there's actually only a small number of people that are going to vote solely on Brexit and nothing else. I don't think it's going to be like the majority of the country is voting on Brexit.
You say on the doorstep. Does that mean that you have been out on the doorstep? And do you do that in your role as a fan of Labour or as a For Our Future's Sake person? What hat do you wear when you're doing it, given the cold
so
weather?
So I tend to wear my Labour hat when I'm out on the hashtag Labour doorstep. So that's sort of quite, it's quite different to like in 2017, what we found in a lot of constituencies was people were saying, you know, I'm not voting Labour because of Corbyn. What we would say to them was, you're not voting for Corbyn, you're voting for who's going to be the best local MP. And that actually worked in quite a lot of places, I think.
As a Millie fan, where do you think the two stack up? Ed Miliband versus Jeremy Corbyn?
There's actually not a lot of policy differences between the two. I think people tend to sort of forget that. Like the manifestos, they're not huge.
It's almost as if policies don't matter as much when people are voting.
Yes, the policy difference between the two are like not a lot. Or, you know, Corbyn's perceived as way more left-wing than Miliband, but his policy agenda isn't necessarily sort of in line with that.
One of my favourite anecdotes on this topic is that allegedly for the 2017 election, the way the Corbyn manifesto was made is that they went through the Miliband manifesto and went policy by policy and went, how much more left can we go on this one and that one and that one? And that's basically how it was made.
What do you reckon? Sound reasonable?
Yeah, it sounds like something that they would do.
For those of our listeners who haven't been on a doorstep canvassing mission, explain to us how it works.
So you basically go out, you get sent to different houses, they'll tell you sort
is
of...
Is this in your constituency or are you sent to another constituency?
You tend to go all over the place. So, for example, especially during by-elections, everyone's just shipped off. I remember Oldham in 2015 and I've never met so many Labour activists I'd then run into over the years. And when I first met them, it was always Oldham in 2015. But I think obviously you get sent to particularly marginal seats and things like that. So we're quite lucky in my constituency in South Ribble. All the Chorley activists that were going to be campaigning for Lindsay Hoyle now don't have to do that. So they're shipping them all off to South Ribble, which is a Tory Labour marginal.
Would you say you enjoy it?
I think I do enjoy it. You know, if it's dark and it's raining, it's definitely less enjoyable.
Oh, well, that's unlikely to be the case in December in England.
I know, what a nightmare. But it's quite nice talking to people. You know, people often think you'll get, like, shouted down the doorstep. I was chased with a guy who had a saw once. That was like a thing.
Yeah, but that's still quite a big deal. 1985, no one died.
But I know a few people have been bitten by dogs as well. But usually it's fine. Like, you talk to people, sometimes they don't want to talk to you back. But a lot of the time people are interested in conversation. I think voters have more nuance than you would think if you hadn't been out on the doorstep. Like, some people have the really weird opinions. Like, they vote for Brexit, but they're really left-wing on everything else. Like, the Lexiteers, they're very strange. And I think it really helps you understand the nuances of why certain seats could turn in certain ways.
Do you think it makes a difference?
I think it does, yeah. I think the reason why Labour did so well in 2017 was partly down to the vast amount of activists you get on the doorstep. The Tories are never going to be able to get that amount of people out on the doorstep. And I think it really helps Labour that we can do that. And particularly because a lot of our activists are very young and we'll go out campaigning at night in December. The Tories activists tend to be a bit older, maybe more reluctant to do that.
If you're interested in the influence that face-to-face campaigning does have, I can recommend Sex, Lies and the Ballot Box, 3 volumes available for Christmas. And that has a whole chapter about this. And there is a lot of evidence to show that it does have a greater impact than anything else. And obviously a lot of concentration on social media nowadays, but obviously that's part of it. But face-to-face is never defeated in terms of its power.
No, I was just going to say these books are very good. Partly if you... I've read the first one twice because I'm tragic. No, because I think it's a really good book, specifically if you're very interested in politics and you really want to appear clever to other people, but also you have no attention span because all the essays are very short.
that's certainly
tough
true.
Enough. Hell yes, I'm tough enough.
We're joined now for our weekly chat with Matthew Shattuck from Ladbrokes. Hello, Matthew.
Hi, Joe.
So this week we're going to focus specifically on Canterbury as our constituency of choice. Tell us, how's that working out in terms of the betting?
Pretty good. I mean, this was one of the biggest surprises of the 2017 election. I think you could have got 50-1 on Labour winning the seat. It was a huge shock. Odds a lot closer this time, but the announcement by the prospective Lib Dem candidate has made a big difference here. Labour were 2-1 to win the seat, but today they're only 11-10, so the betting's very, very close. Tories just about favourites, but the betting very divided.
Has there been a lot of fluctuation in the betting recently with regards to the changing candidates in that seat?
Well, there was certainly a little surge of optimism for the Lib Dems once Tim Walker announced he was going to run. But as I said, as soon as he said he was going to pull out, everybody wanted to be on Labour. Sounds like the Lib Dems are still going to put a candidate up, last thing I heard. But I assume it would be a sort of paper candidate, not much effort put into it. So, yeah, could be very, very close.
But I thought actually that was quite interesting, the whole, you know, the kind of bubble thing, you know, oh, like, you know, big beast Tim Walker standing in Canterbury. Like, and I mean, you know, I'm not trying to be rude or anything, but no one in the real world knows who Tim Walker is. That's not like, you know, a proper sort of like celebrity or someone genuinely kind of famous and influential standing somewhere. Like, I thought that was a very kind of like great example of bubble think, of saying, oh, well, you know, if Tim Walker's standing, then, you know, that's going to have an effect. Like, as a person, I doubt that, you know, that would kind of genuinely influence your normal voter.
Yeah, you're probably right. I guess it's hard. Yeah, I guess hardly anyone's actually heard of Tim Walker outside of the bubble, as you say. I suppose it sort of indicated that maybe the Lib Dems were trying a bit harder. If they put a big name candidate in there, perhaps they really thought they could win and they're going to divert some resources there. But you're probably right. It probably makes no difference one way or the other who it was.
We've talked about the fact that the polls have been largely unchanged during the last week. Have the betting markets moved at all when it comes to the overall result?
Yes, I guess the big change was the Farage announcement. Very mixed opinions on how much difference that's going to make, but the betting market saw it's fairly significant. So when we talked last week, no overall majority was still favourite to be the outcome. Now a Tory majority is favourite, 4-7 with Ladbrokes. So the betting market's response to the Farage announcement was to move a Tory majority from about a 50% chance to about a 60% chance, which is a fairly big move in our world. In terms of seats, well, it sort of seems to have added about 12 seats on to the expected return from the Tories. So Ladbrokes here, we've now got a number of 339 for our midpoint of Tory seats. And if that's true, we're looking at a Tory majority of about 28 seats.
OK, great. Matthew Shattuck, we'll be speaking to you next week. Thank you.
I'm tough enough.
Inequality.
I'm tough enough. Hell yes, I'm tough enough.
Abby, how old were you when Millie fandom kicked off?
I was 17. I'd turned 17 about like 2 months before. So I actually wasn't able to vote in the election, which was quite a shame to a lot of people.
And you were on social media at the time.
Yes. So it's quite weird, actually. I already had about 10,000 followers from just being a fan of stuff before Millie fandom actually happened. So people think I kind of got it all from politics, but most of it was actually because I liked Sherlock and Doctor Who.
But do you not think, because I remember, actually, that was really weird. I got reminded of that recently, of the weird war I got into with the Lolitics crowd on Tumblr in 2015.
So who are the Lolitics crowd?
So I think, Abby, I don't know what you make of it, but because I think the Millie fandom was in a way quite linked to the kind of like Lolitics people.
Yeah.
It was just a community on Tumblr of quite young people who would just make, I mean, it's a thing that's really common now, but I think was quite rare at the time and quite niche. But basically just young people making memes about politicians and about MPs. And that was mostly on Tumblr at the time and not sort of like Twitter, wherever else. And I think actually I was one of the first journalists to kind of cover it, mostly because I'm extremely online. But I think, yeah, what do you make, I guess, of the kind of evolution? Because I think on the one hand, Lolitics doesn't really exist anymore. But on the other hand, you could probably make the argument that that's because it's taken over the political discourse entirely, of like weird memes and shitposting about MPs and about politicians is kind of, and fandoms as well. You know, if you look at the work of like academic Penny Andrews on that, it's really interesting. But yeah, has fandom of politicians gone mainstream, you think?
I think so, yeah. I think literally when a politician does anything nowadays, most people's immediate thought is, how can I make this into a meme? Like, my favourite one is a video of Jeremy Corbyn when he's walking down the stairs and he's like, hi, how you doing? We're back, we're ready for it all over again. And like, just stuff like that, like random videos that they do that then just turned like this huge meme that's shared so widely.
What was it like being a young woman on social media leading a fandom campaign like that?
It was quite strange. I got like a lot of abuse then, which was obviously given because I was a young woman on social media. Most of it did come from Louise Mensch, actually, because she didn't understand my username on Twitter, so she called me like Miss Coddleston. I was like, well, that's not my name, is it? It was about Tom Hiddleston, actually, and he's actually DM'd me since then.
What?
Yeah, so it is
full
circle.
And now you're friends?
I wouldn't say we're friends, but
he
did DM me about a week after his breakup with Taylor Swift, so I think I'm allowed to say that I'm his official rebound.
I'd take that if I were you. I exchanged one DM with Ellie Goulding.
That's a good one.
I reckon we're friends too.
I thought I need to come up with one now, but I didn't really have like this. Nothing springing to mind. I had a chat with Samuel L. Jackson once, and he thought I was a spy.
That's a chat in real life, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's much better.
Yeah, that's
much
cool.
Better than anything we have. Now we're going to move on to what we call our election big questions. and you, and then Marie will answer. Will answer each one of these questions. So, question one: what will you be doing during the campaign?
I will be door knocking mostly. So I'm going to just be doing that for the next 4 weeks.
So is that a day in, day out thing?
Yes.
There's been some discussion about whether holding an election in December will have an effect on particularly the canvassing operations of the particular parties. We've only had two, I think, winter elections in the post-war period, so we don't have much to compare it to. But anecdotally, what's your sense? Do you think that during the campaign we'll see no difference in the canvassing because of the weather, or will it have an impact?
I think it will have an impact, but as I said before, I think it'll have more an impact for the Conservatives. And what I found quite interesting was when I remember door knocking for Oldham, and a lot of people, just because you were out campaigning in the rain, would then say, oh, I'm going to vote for you now because you've made the effort to come out in the dark and the rain. We had that like so many times, someone would be like, oh no, I actually will vote Labour because you're here, you're talking to me and it's horrible weather.
I did have a weirdly similar thing once where I was trying to... There's a great journalistic tradition every year when the Tories hold their black and white bull. So there's always a group of journalists, normally the most junior political journalist in every sort of like place, has to go outside and try to get... Because, you know, there's the really cringe auction book of, you know, like shoe shopping at Theresa May, etc. And so we're the first journalist who can get one of those from one of the attendees at the end of it. And I did it once, obviously. And it was raining really, really hard. And I was really like, we're all struggling to get one because obviously no one wanted to give it to us. And eventually I decided to put my umbrella on the ground because I thought if I'm just really, really drenched, people may feel sorry for me and actually may be more likely to give one to me. It did not actually work, but still. So yeah, no, so that's definitely, I think, a psychology thing. I'm now realising this anecdote is not as funny as I thought it would be, but I feel like I started it, so I had to finish it.
I think this is still worth keeping in, but obviously Nick will be the ultimate arbiter of this. On that subject, I live in a constituency that Lib Dems are pushing hard for in London, as I guess is often the case. But I haven't been canvassed yet. I've had a leaflet every day, but no one's knocked on my door. Have either of you had anyone knocking on your door?
Weirdly, I have not. So because I live in Vauxhall, so obviously I think we could probably build a shed in our garden now just from Lib Dem leaflets we've had. There's been so many of them. But no, I've only ever been doorstep once in my 10 years in the UK, and that was when I was living in Peckham, which is really weird because that's one of the safest like Labour seats in the country. And that was really nice, actually. This woman came to my door and I was like, hi, I can't vote. I'm a foreigner, but we can have a chat. And we had a lovely chat. It was in 2015. And then she left again.
Did you invite her in for a cup of coffee, that sort of thing, to warm up?
You're not allowed to go into people's houses.
Really?
They're like, if someone invites you in, you have to say no. You're not allowed to go in and talk to them.
Oh, really? And is that a new thing?
It's like a safety thing, just because you don't know what people are going to do when you're inside their house.
That makes sense.
I've known that since, like, I think when I first went canvassing, I was told that. So I think it's been a thing for a while, yeah.
Okay, so if you want to get rid of a canvasser, the way to do it is actively...
Please come in. Come in.
Yeah, sounds ideal. Just answer the door in just a dressing gown and invite people in. Yeah.
Wasn't it? I've always loved seeing some people. I've never been door knocking, obviously, but when people discuss it on Twitter and of all parties, all stripes, whatever, of apparently the amount of people who will open the door naked or partially naked.
Oh God, yeah. People just like open the door like in their underwear and they look shocked at you for like they didn't expect to see anyone at the door. Like they're just like, why are you seeing me? It's like you're the one who answered the door in your underwear. It's so strange.
What was it? I think was it Jessica? I can't remember which MP was talking about the amount of people who like you can hear them shout from inside, hang on, I'm in the bath, and then just come out and it's like, just stay in the bath, it's fine. We can come back another time.
A lovely thought and a lovely image. Question number two, what will you be doing during the day of the election?
I think I will probably be out on the doorstep all day, but I'm most excited to stay up all night. I think that's just, it's just very fun to do that. But then you get really drunk too early and then you're like hungover by 4 a.m. And if it's a bad result for you, you then hate your life. Like in 2017, I remember we started drinking at like 8, it was ridiculous. And then we were on shots by like midnight and then by 4 or 5 a.m., it was just, I was walking home trying to order Domino's and it wasn't happening. And I was just really, really angry about the whole thing.
What will you be doing during election night this year then? Same thing? That's question three.
Probably, yes. I'm so excited about staying up and watching results come in. It's
Where
very
do you
enjoyable.
Do it? Do you do it at home?
Yeah, I think we're going to have a little election watching party. There's going to be a lot of those going around.
I'm glad you asked, Joe, because I believe I have the perfect plan, which I have done several times now. But I do believe that basically you have to wake up not too early, but not too late the day, well, I guess election day. Then you have a nap from precisely 4 p.m. till 6 p.m. That's the disco nap. Then you wake up, you have a bath. Then you have food at about sort of like 7, 8 p.m. Then you have to get to the party.
What food do you have? Is there special election?
I think
food
carbs. For, I think it needs yeah. it needs to be carb heavy. Then you have to get to your election party, probably the first one of those, at about 9 p.m. Not earlier than that, because as Abby has pointed out, otherwise you just start drinking too early and getting drunk too early. And then I'd say you probably do, so exit poll in the first set, way at party number one. Then you maybe want to aim to get one of the later tubes before midnight, and then you get to party number two, and that's where you stay until about 7 a.m. You're welcome.
Yeah.
And no shots, no shots.
Yeah, no shots. That would be a bad idea.
I'd say even stay on the wine, probably not the beer, because beer will make you sleepy.
Yeah.
So I think stay on the wine, maybe the gin and tonics, maybe like a rogue whiskey and coke. It's sort of like 3, 4 a.m.
What happens if you're called up by journalists asking for a response?
I don't know. I just do elections in a drinking capacity, so I didn't really know. But no, actually, in 2017, I did that, but managed to phase out the alcohol from about 5 a.m. And at 7 a.m., I was back in the newsroom until 2 p.m. So there you go. Bit of an expert, bit of a professional here.
Question 4. What do you think will happen?
I actually think there could be a hung parliament, which is going to be a nightmare. But I think it's going to be close. And I think the smaller parties could potentially end up being the kingmakers, which is why it's quite interesting that Jo Swinson has said she weren't going to coalition with either of them. I think seeing whether she would stick to that in the event of hung parliament would be very interesting indeed.
And lastly, who is going to be the next prime minister after Boris Johnson?
I honestly wish I knew. No idea.
No, you wouldn't like to speculate?
No, because I just think it all depends on what the smaller parties do and how many votes they get.
Jeb.
And finally, Abby, if you were to ask the general public if Britain would be better off if there were more billionaires in this country or fewer billionaires in this country, what do you think the result would be?
I think people underestimate how much people want to be able to become billionaires. I think they might say more just in the hope that they would be one of them. But I think overall, probably few will be the answer, I would hope.
Marie, what do you reckon?
Yeah, I'd probably say more.
Well, the answer was only 24% of people said that, taking everything into account, Britain would be better off if there were more billionaires in this country.
Oh,
44% of people said, taking everything into account, Britain would be better off if there were fewer billionaires in this country. And nearly a third of the public, 32%, said they didn't know.
Cheers, the general public.
Helpful.
Enlightening.
So there we go. Abby, thank you very much for coming
in. Thank you.
Please remember to like, subscribe, review, all these different things that help people hear about us. And do tell all of your friends and many of the people that you don't know, even if you haven't enjoyed the podcast. This is a Poddo podcast produced by Nick Hilton, and our theme tune is by Joe Button.
For more details, go to podopods.com, and for sales and advertising, email nick@podopods.com.
And yes, that's spelled podopods.com.